Do you want to sit?
Hey, Tony, can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, yeah. Good. Good, good, good. Welcome, and good to see you. Where are you at?
Well, we live near Atlanta, and I'm in my home office today.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm up in Oregon today, so good to see you.
I was trying to convince my team that they need to send me to Hawaii for this interview, but I didn't convince them to do it.
Well, it's your persuasive techniques that need some work.
Okay. Interview. We'll just jump straight into questions. And then at the end, we'll wrap up. I'll probably ask folks if they want to follow more of your writing and what you're providing as far as leadership resources for you to have an opportunity to share that.
Okay.
We'll end the interview. I'll stop the recording and we can finish our conversation at that point.
Tony, how long do you want me to go when I'm answering a question? A minute, 5 minutes? I can go an hour on each.
Yeah. So we've been recording about 20 to 25 minutes.
Okay.
And that probably will be edited down to 15 to 20 minutes for each of these interviews.
Okay. So each question about 4 minutes then or so?
Four to 5 minutes probably.
Okay.
Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah, that's fine. Wonderful. That's great. Tony, also, as I'm answering, if you want to jump in, you know, and clarify something or go a little different way, our connection's really good today. So go ahead and just jump in. It feels very, very live.
All right. And something for you to know, at least on my end, when as we're recording, when you talk, your face will be on the screen. When I talk, my face will be on the screen. And so if you see me looking at notes while you're talking, just continue talking and don't let that interrupt you. But I want to make sure I'm following through with the questions that we planned previously.
Got it. And if you want to go a different way, it's fine too.
All right. Well, very good. All right. Well, are you ready to get started?
He's going to put a little powder. I guess there's a glow. They have to work really hard to make me look this way. In fact, they have to do a little more, they say. Okay, how's that? Okay.
All right, are we ready?
We're ready.
Okay.
All right.
We'll start the recording and get going here then. Well, Wayne, I really appreciate you joining us today. We're having a great conversation about how we can help churches get more volunteers. And I thought no better person to go to as it relates to not only engaging volunteers in ministry, but certainly helping leaders take next steps and to talk with you. So thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, Tony, it's great to be with you. And this whole subject of volunteerism is huge because if you had to hire everyone to do a certain job, there wouldn't be enough funding to go around. So this is an extremely important subject for everybody.
Well, Wayne, in your book, Doing Church as a Team, you talk about this importance of nurturing the team. So can you share a little bit? I mean, this is kind of post, folks are already connected into the ministry, but how do we help nurture the folks that are connected with us on these serving teams?
Nurturing people is very, very important, and everyone doesn't sort of get nurtured the same way. It's sort of like I've got some friends, when they come over to Hawaii, they say, "Wayne, I eat everything except that raw stuff." And so I say, "Oh, sushi, yes, yes, we don't do sushi well." So I've got to figure out what nurtures them or what they like to eat and what they don't like to eat. And one of the very first steps in learning to nurture volunteers is to find out sort of what their purpose is in getting involved with ministry. For some people, it is, I just really love camera work or video work or singing or whatever it might be. Others might say, you know, I just like to be around you because I want you to teach me some things about leadership or spirituality or growth. Someone else might say, I don't need either. I just want to serve. I just want a place to get my hands dirty for a while. So you've got to find out what people are, what their purpose is, what they enjoy, what they don't enjoy, what they eat, what they don't eat, and keep that in your mind as a leader. So otherwise, you'll be forcing people to eat sushi that hate it, and you're pushing fried chicken on somebody that would rather eat sushi. So everyone is individual, and nurturing is the same way. So I keep a record in my mind that this person sort of is this way, this one has a certain personality, this one loves this. And so I know, for example, one lady loves children. That's it. So I get her going in children's ministry, and she doesn't need to hear from me for the next month or two. And all she needs is a hug and a word to say thank you, a sincere and authentic word. Thank you for what you're doing with the children here. And she brightens up and says, it's my pleasure. And it's like, now you can go for another month because I'm good. So you want to be able to nurture people according to their needs.
Just so you know, I'm a fan of sushi, so we should stick with that. But I thought it interesting, as you were talking about, that there are kind of two key aspects of serving and how we connect on serving teams. One of them, it was about the ministry that we get to do, the tasks. And then I heard you talk about the relationships. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yeah, relationships, sort of the oil in the gears. We know we need to have the gears. They need to mesh and they need to hold in order to get traction. But you run that out of oil or grease, you still have all of the mechanics there, Tony, but you don't have the oiled relationships. That's just absolutely huge. I could not overemphasize that at all, because relationships are critical. A lot of the people, again, they may be a children's worker and their gears are running. They just need to know that they're doing good with you, that you appreciate them, that you feel that they're highly esteemed and valued, and they're good to go. That relationship oil, so critical. So sometimes I just basically walk through the church, walk through the volunteers, hug them, encourage them, thank them sincerely, and that means more than anything else. That's what they want. Am I valuable at all? Am I doing something good? And you say, you are. You're more than you ever realize in the eyes of Christ. And that's huge.
All right, Wayne. I want to put you in the shoes of the paid staff members, your church, any other church. And I think one of the traps that we might tend to fall into is that we begin to look at the volunteers in our ministry. We look at them serving us rather than us serving them. And as a result of that, I'd love to hear how you challenge your paid staff to make sure they're equipping God's people to do the work of God, and that those volunteers don't view their role as serving us.
That's a great, great question, Tony, about how to keep our paid staff online and on task of serving and nurturing our volunteers. Because how often it's so easy to slump into, you know, I've got a lot to do, help me. I got this to do, help me. I got that to do, help me. Where you been? And every single staff will fall into that. Ephesians chapter 4 says, pastors and evangelists, etc., are given, here it is, to the equipping of the saints to do the work of the ministry until we all attain to the unity of the faith, etc. But go back to the first one. We are to be equipping the saints to do the work of the ministry. So really, who does the work of the ministry? The saints. But the saints won't do the work of the ministry if shepherds don't equip them. So those two go in tandem. And sometimes we think it's like, I do the work of the ministry and you help me. When in actuality, it's they do the work of the ministry and pastor, equip me. And if we can keep that in our minds, that will help immensely. So leadership among the leaders, my leadership among our staff leaders, is very, very important, and it's relentless. Constantly go around, I check the pulse of the ministry. I keep my finger on the pulse of the ministry, relationships, and I have to move in very quickly, quite discreetly, and correct. For example, came in one morning and the music director was there, and one of the guys came in late. It was a trumpet player, and we have five services, so he missed the first service and he came in for the second. And as soon as he came in, the music director looked at him and said, where you been? I thought you were committed. So I could see the countenance of this trumpet player drop a little, who's a volunteer. And so I took my music director and I said to him on the side, I said, do you know what he went through this morning? He said, what did he go through? I said, well, I don't know, but it could have been a sick wife or a baby that was throwing up all night. You have no idea. So you can't start at your starting point. You got to start at his. You have no idea what he's gone through. And he might be out back crying now, because he's lost. I had a sick kid all night. I missed the first service. At least I'm making four of the five. So then he went back. He said, I got it. So he went back and made it right. But that's what we have to do as pastors. You keep your finger on the pulse of everything that you can, because one mistake like that and the erosion begins with volunteers. It's a relentless ministry, but it's absolutely critical.
Wayne, do you have a sense, because I think this is pretty common for paid staff members, that they if they really see their role as, I'm supposed to do the ministry, I'm they're paying me, the church is paying me, and there's accountability for me to follow through. Do you have a sense of why paid staff kind of find themselves kind of shifting into that pattern of thinking?
Yeah, it's not a wrong pattern per se. It's just that they figure, you know, they were hired and trusted to fulfill a certain job, a certain ministry. And so they're doing it the best they can. They just need coaching along the side. And one of the things I say to our staff, and I have been and still do, I say to people, we don't hire those who do it well as much as we want to hire those who can equip others who will do it well. And so every staff person should have a team, whether it's 2 or 3 or 10 or 50, each of them should have a team that they're training. But if they're pushing people aside to do it themselves, then I think we've got to move in and re-envision them with the purpose of the ministry. For example, I had a sound man that did that, you know, pushed everybody aside, and because he wants to do it all himself. He knows where everything is. And one day we had a funeral, and he was gone somewhere or forgot about it, and nobody knew how to turn on the soundboard. It was a digital soundboard, and you have snapshots, and it's a little complicated because there's digital screens, and it was crazy bad. So when he came back in, I said, do you know the Blue Man Group? You know, I said, that plays drums and they all look exactly the same because they're bald headed and blue. And I said, although there might be four or so playing the drums, I bet the Blue Man Group has maybe 8 or 9, because on tour, all of those guys can't always be there. So what they do is they just get another great drummer, cut his hair, and they paint him blue. And so they probably have 9, you know, blue man guys, but you only see 4 or so. And I said, I want our sound system to be like the blue man group, where it's not just you, but it could be 8 of you. And it doesn't matter who's on the board because you've trained them well. And when I look back, all I see is a blue man. And that's good enough for me. It doesn't have to be you, man. It just has to be a blue man. So I want everything labeled and I want to see you training. And so he began doing that. And now we have 6 or 7 people that can run the board. And so as a leader, I've got to keep pressing people towards that kind of mentality. Otherwise, it will vortex into one person and he alone protects that equipment. That's just how humans are, but you have to keep them with a broader vision.
That's great. And I think if my hair keeps falling out of this pace, I won't even have to do the haircut. They can just throw on blue paint. you know, as I was preparing for today's conversation, I was recalling something I've heard you say. You said this: when you really believe that leaders are there, you'll be surprised how many wonderful leaders start showing up. So let me ask you this. In addition to believing in it, how do we proactively connect those leaders to the ministry that's happening? And this is not just about the servants. There are lots of servants in our church. But what specifically about the leaders? How do we help connect leaders into the ministry?
Yeah, great question. A couple of things. The first is that belief is that which sets the invitational culture. When you believe that there's people out there that can do all of these things, it sort of tacitly gives the church permission to try. Because one of the greatest impediments or blockages in people's lives that could be innately very, very talented, but it's fear of failure, fear of making someone upset, fear of not producing something of a caliber that should be. And so they stand behind fear. Fear is a giant to them. Fear of, again, making mistakes and not doing it well. So if you just believe that there's people out there, it gives them permission to try. That is absolutely huge. The very people that are doing this video for me, the guy behind the camera, the guy that's running the computer, Peter, he was working with us when he was a high school kid and saying, you can do it, come on in, try it. And Dave began doing video and editing, and a lot of our video post-production people came in with very little training and they just learn on the fly. We send them to Final Cut Pro classes and give them the equipment and try it. And at first, you know, it's okay, but now this guy that's doing this is fantastic, and Peter, our webmaster, is quite a master at it. So, but you got to give them a start. So one is you got to believe in them. The second thing, Tony, is like draws like. For example, if you have really good camera people and they have that same invitational culture, because culture is very contagious. If I don't have that, if I'm always pushing people away and hiring people all the time instead of encouraging our own people, it's like, well, we're not going to get involved. But if you have people that have that same heart of invitation and they're actually doing music, they're doing the cameras, and they're doing well, they will draw others. Leaders draw leaders. Musicians draw musicians. But if it's all paid people, they're protecting their territory. But if there's team leaders that are staff, then that same permission is being handed out to so many people, and it mushrooms. So now our people come and say, how in the world do you have so many great musicians and singers and dancers? Because great musicians, singers, and dancers draw other great musicians, singers, and dancers. But the culture is what you have to pass on to all of these people. So then they start developing in those others or training them. to be great photographers. In fact, our photographer, that's a phenomenal photographer, started off doing CDs for me. And then he said, but I'd like to take pictures. And he kept wanting to take pictures. So finally, one day, and he was a staff person. I said to him, I said, his name is Derek. Derek, we don't have a place for a full-time still photographer. He said, but I'd want to take pictures. So I take pictures, take pictures. And then now get back to your CDs. And he was running CDs. And finally, I realized what a great photographer he was. And I said, Derek, you're going to have to let me fire you. And he said, what? I said, the only way you will get into photography full-time is if I fire you. And I'll help you get set up, and you'll take pictures for us, and we'll pay you. But we don't have a place for a full-time still photographer. So, but I'll help you. You got to trust me. Well, today we did fire him. And today he's, I think, one of the best in the state of Hawaii. Phenomenal still photographer. So you want to develop these guys and always think that my ministry isn't the biggest deal. It's them using their gift is the biggest deal, getting that developed. And once they see that, you know, they're very valuable. In fact, the guy doing this video right now, he has his own company and still a part of the church, still one of our dearest friends, but his skills are absolutely amazing and he runs his own company now. So we still partner with him, but it gives him a world to go after as well. So relationships are huge. They don't have to be on our staff. You just have to believe in them. Some remain, some go, but relationships continue wherever they are in the kingdom.
Well, I love that principle. And the fact is, too, because what you're talking about can be applied both to the largest of churches, but the smallest of churches. We're trying to find people that will equip, that will identify somebody's gift and position them in ministry so that they're fulfilled doing what they get to do for God's work. But then certainly the church benefits from that, Wayne. And really, we're getting at the heart of the reason why I wanted to talk with you. I know for many years you've had a heart for mentoring leaders. And so what I want to think about now is, okay, we've connected those leaders onto our ministry teams. Now they're serving, but what do we need to continue to do with those leaders so that they continue to grow spiritually in their leadership? How do we continue to develop those leaders?
Development in a leader is, it's not just one thing. You know, we can say, well, develop them spiritually and everything will be fine. Yes and no. It's like a key. You have several cuts in a key. If you just file one cut and make it really nice and WD-40 it, one cut is wonderful, but you really need about six cuts before that lock turns. And so you've got to identify what those would be. Well, one would be their spiritual life. If that cut is bad, the other cuts could be fine, but it's going to stick, and you're going to have sticky points in that person's ministry. The other is their people skills, their ability to work with other people. So it's not just cranking out CDs or whatever it might be. It's working with those that you have to relate to on a daily basis. And then the other is time management. If they're a volunteer or a paid staff, but they have no concept of time management, you're going to have major conflicts because someone is waiting on that person for his product or his task to be done, and they can't do those theirs unless that's done. So it's like pieces of a puzzle. I've got one piece, but I can't fit it in until you got yours here, another one there, and then now mine fits. But without that and without this one, I really don't have the corners, or I don't have the link-ups yet. So time management, expectations, people skills are so important. So what I do is we still do leadership training classes. So I call it a School of Christian Leadership every Friday morning at 6:30 a.m. at the office. So we have about 120 that come, and I go over people skills, time management. I just got finished with a communicators workshop, how to communicate with your wife or your team, or if you're in a corporation, a CEO, can you communicate with your employees? So we have volunteers coming that are CEOs or online workers or whatever it might be. Everybody needs to learn to communicate correctly, with passion, with understanding, with clarity. So I'm not just training them for ministry purposes, I'm training them for life, because they're out there for 8 hours a day. And if you can train them in a way that helps them with the rest of their life, they'll come often to that church, because that's a place they can use their gifts, but in return, they get something of great benefit for everything else they're doing. What a great sync up. What a great connection that is. It's just a wonderful, wonderful relationship.
All right. So I really do appreciate how you're talking about connecting leaders and then mentoring leaders. But let's talk now about how to empower leaders. And in other words, I think there's a distinction between just giving somebody a task to do and giving them real responsibility to lead ministry, to allow them the freedom within the framework of the church's vision and values and strategy to really use their leadership gifts. So how do you help both staff leaders but also volunteer leaders understand that distinction between empowerment and maybe just delegation, which is also important for leadership? How do you help them understand the distinction so that you're really empowering the leaders in your ministry?
Yeah, that's a great question. Again, there's not one answer to that. If you can think of a car that has to go in sync with other cars so that you feel like you're still at the exact same speed. You've got some cars that are like leaders that are Ferraris. They want to go faster and say, just get in line. Others are like 1962 Volkswagen Bugs that are huffing and puffing just to keep up. And so what you have to do is some leaders, I've got to hold back. It's called brakes. You've got to say, whoa, they just want to run off and way ahead of everybody else and leaves everybody else panting and tired. And they're saying, what's wrong with everybody? Come on. So those I have to sort of hold back. One of the leaders, I said, could you oversee these services? And you bet. And he started delegating stuff out and say, you got to do this and sent out this mass email. And I looked at it and I said, whoa, we've got to start small. You can't start with detonating, you know, all your enemies at once here. You've got to pick them off one by one and choose where your battles are going to be, it's almost like military strategy. You just got to choose wisely. You just can't wipe them all out with a nuclear blast here. Let's think through what we're going to do. So some guys need breaks, and you have to learn how to do that. Otherwise, you'll set them up for failure. So one of the things a leader has to do is take a look at each of his staff or her staff and make sure that they're not going headlong into failure. So bring them back, set them up for success. And sometimes they don't see it, and they'll push against you and box you, but you know, you got to, me as a leader, I've got to constantly scrub my heart to say, am I setting them up for success, or do I just want to tell them what to do and what not to do so it sort of keeps them in my comfort zone? They don't give me trouble. Can't do that. They will give you trouble. You see, leaders are like stallions. They're not old gray mares. Old gray mares are nice because they don't give you much trouble. They just stand there all day. There's no impulsion. They just sit. They stand. Nothing. But stallions are skittish. They move. They push against the fences. And so sometimes you have to realize that you got to know how to deal with stallions. Well, what about the gray mares? A lot of them like the gray mares, but it's not mares. Old gray mares that win the races for you. It's stallions. Stallions win the Kentucky Derbies for you. So you have to be able to understand you're going to work with some of these and you've got to hold them back. Now, other leaders, you've got to work on impulsion and press them forward because they say, well, I don't want to hurt anybody. Well, I don't know if someone, you know, they have time for this. And it's wonderful. They've got a shepherd's heart, but you have to kind of get them going. No, 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 Sally. Listen, the ladies really want to serve with you. So please, I want you to send out an email. And so I will actually write them and say, have you sent the email out yet? Can you do that? And once they get into the flow, you've given them some impulsion, some you've given breaks. And what you're doing is you understand the flow of the church and you want to make sure your leaders are moving at their pace just a little bit more to keep them moving forward. Not so far or so behind that it causes an inconsistency. You as a leader have to make sure that the flow is going correctly, in the right speed, with the right cadence, and the right rhythm.
Wayne, let's conclude with this. I know at New Hope you've had many, many years of great success in ministry and many, many thousands of lives impacted by your church, which now is in locations throughout the world. But I want you to go back to your early days as a pastor and just speak to the pastors, either a new church, small church, just beginning to take first steps as it relates to volunteer ministry and trying to empower others in the church to share what it is to be in ministry together. What were some of the first priorities that you focused on in those early days?
One of the things that helped me a lot was my perspective on just building leaders. So even if a non-Christian came, my goal was to get them saved, get them discipled, get them serving. Everybody that I could. So, and they said, well, but Wayne, that's your congregation. I said, no, they're not my congregation. They're my leaders in training. My congregation is, and I'd look out the window and I'd say, you see those cars going by? You see the people of the city? That's our congregation. These that God's bringing in the initial stages are pre-leaders. And so I've got to train them. I've got to get them ready. Now, pretty soon, these others are going to come, and I can't train them all into being leaders. But by that time, I'll have a pretty good-sized cadre that I've trained, and they will minister to the many others. Now, I keep that going, and the saints will be equipped to do the work of the ministry. So you've got to understand that. Once you start seeing everybody as your congregation, then you're just kind of loving on everybody, and that's nice. But then you've set the culture that you're going to do it all. And then you're tired, and you say, help me love on these people. But really, nobody's leading them. You want to build under-shepherds. Then the under-shepherds minister to the people, and you then start fishing out of their groups for the best leaders, as it were, fishers of men. You turn them into Peter, James, and John's, and they go out. And so I look at our men's group, our women's group, our youth group as fishing ponds for new leaders. So out of our youth group, I've found quite a few wonderful interns now that we have an internship program, which is a part of our mentoring. And they've all come out of our groups because I fish. So I train leaders, they develop their groups, and then I just go around and fish out of their ponds for the best leaders. And then we put them in our intern program. They become great leaders and they keep multiplying in that way.
Well, Wayne, we certainly do appreciate your time with us today. It's very obvious. Not only are you bringing experience, but you're bringing great wisdom. And I want people to have a chance to continue to follow your journey. Is there a way that people can continue to follow what you're writing and what you're sharing about?
Yeah, they could go to mentoringleaders.com, mentoringleaders.com. And there, it's kind of my blog on steroids. And so I'll put articles up there. There's books. And if you want to go to our main website, just dial E for electronic or enewhope.org, enewhope.org. And you'll go into the church's website. But for leadership, mentoringleaders.com.
Very good. Wayne, thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.